Hello, and thanks for joining us for this episode of the DINFOS Way, a Department of Defense podcast developed and produced at the Defense Information School. This program is dedicated to developing and showcasing the skills of military communicators, public affairs professionals, and industry experts from all over the world. I'm your host, Jack Rouse. I'm a former Navy and civilian journalist and a current training specialist here at DINFOS. Joining us today is Colonel Jennifer Bocanegra, a former DINFOS instructor and director of training, who's currently the public affairs director for I-Corps at JBLM in Washington State. Colonel Bocanegra is a public affairs master who has honed her skills at some of the most interesting and complex assignments in the military today. She has served at the 1st Cavalry Division, NATO Special Operations Component Command Afghanistan, and the U.S. Special Operations Command, among many others. She's here with us to share her knowledge and experience while digging into some of the public affairs challenges we face today and expanding upon the critical role communicators play in the information space. Colonel, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much. This is a great opportunity to talk to the schoolhouse. I've been through there in 2009 initially as a public affairs student with the public affairs qualification course, and then I had an opportunity to serve there and instruct future public affairs professionals from 2016 through 2019, which was an amazing experience. DINFOS is a great organization with a team of talented professionals, and as you know, the information environment is constantly evolving, and so we are forced to lean forward and constantly refine our skills to adapt to the modern techniques and tactics that are being used, especially looking at our competition and conflict as well.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and that's why I'm glad you're here, because we'll get into it in a second. But you've written some articles recently that I think we're going to pull some stuff from that I think would be really valuable for our listeners. So again, thank you for joining us. And first thing I would say is if you could quickly just give us a summary of your career and how you came to be where you are today.
Sure. And I think you summarized it pretty well. I started off in 2000. I started off back in the 90s. In 1995, I graduated from the combat camera course that was once in Pensacola, Florida. I then went on, served for about 5 years from doing documentation work in Utah, and then went to Fort Bragg, North Carolina, and also served with an AFN station in Panama. I then went through and got my degree and received a commission, and then I was able to transition to public affairs in 2009. And since then, I've had a ton of opportunities to serve with very talented professionals and in combat operations as well as garrison. I served with the 82nd Airborne Division initially in 2009 to 2010. I also have had an opportunity to serve with Special Operations Units, 3rd Special Forces Group, and then also later on with U.S. Special Operations Command as a media desk officer. And then most recently, I've served with the 1st Cavalry Division, which is a very well-known name brand with a lot of rich history to share. And over the past year and a half, I've had an opportunity to serve with 1st Corps, where we're playing a key role as a land force component for the Indo-Pacific region. Lots of opportunities here we take part in exercises throughout the region. And so we're building that interoperability, looking at, from an information capability. And then we're also able to help to refine our own skills with our information-related capability team. And how can we best achieve the information advantage right now in a competitive environment and potentially in a conflict?
That's amazing. You've done some really fascinating stuff, which I think has contributed directly to your ability to kind of see the information space from a big picture perspective, which I think is really valuable. You recently wrote an article for the website FromTheGreenNotebook.com, which is something popular in our community. And the article itself was a fascinating read and inspired us to reach out to you for this episode. Can you talk a little bit about the content of that article and sort of what you hoped its overall effect would be?
Sure. So I feel that at times, commanders, public affairs isn't really forefront on their minds and looking at information operations, especially with the Army. It's not an Army warfighting function. It's a joint warfighting function. And so I just wanted to show the relevance of public affairs as we look at information advantage and the recent publication it's an Army publication, the 3-13. And I just wanted to show, just looking at right now current conflicts, looking at Ukraine and Russia, and then a conflict going on in in Israel, just looking at, you know, how those military forces or the government officials are leveraging public affairs, and just looking at our own in the Army, looking at the exercises First Corps is doing, and also just looking over in Europe with our counterparts, 5th Corps and U.S. Army Europe, and the exercises we're participating in, and how we're leveraging that imagery and the timely release of information to achieve an effect, you know, in the information space, and help our commanders. Not only are we helping them with decision making, but we're also helping them to build morale among our own forces, and then potentially impact our adversary forces.
Absolutely. In the article, you mentioned that the evolution of public affairs is obviously made it a key component of what's happening in information warfare. How has the transformation of the information space and our information warfare goals affected how public affairs professionals operate in the service today?
Definitely. I feel as, you know, looking at when I first came in 2009, that's when social media was very new, and it wasn't as built up. And like looking at today's environment, public affairs are almost on watch 24/7 with information, especially coming through non-traditional channels, the social media platforms. We look at our own leadership, our president and our Department of Defense leaders are all communicating over social media platforms or non-traditional. And so we're constantly watching, being called on to watch and again, provide our commanders that information, kind of an update to help them with decision making. And then we're assessing where can public affairs apply and help to shape the narrative the public perception of our organizations, and then help to shape the narrative as we would like it to achieve effects in the information space. And a big role for public affairs is definitely countering mis- and disinformation and propaganda. We see this from competing nations. There's unfortunately a lot of false information that goes out. I think we're definitely, as public affairs, that's our charge to put out that timely, accurate information. So number one, we have to monitor, and then we have to be prepared to respond with the correct information. That way we're gaining support for our organization, and we're also ensuring that the right information is going out through public news channels.
And what are some ways, maybe some examples you can give us of ways that public affairs professionals have managed to really clarify those military objectives and help maintain public support during those complex operations?
So in the article, and unfortunately, not that we're currently not in a conflict, but looking, I cited examples from the Russia-Ukraine conflict. As we know, this is constantly evolving and changing, but early on, when you look at President Zelensky and Ukraine and what they have done, was just very proactively gone out and, to advocate for their case, to show that, what Russia was doing in their country. And I think, initially, I think they were very successful in gaining support and building trust with their efforts. Of course, as we know, this is an evolving conflict, and the information environment is constantly adjusting with the narrative. I think they did a good job of shaping the global narrative and gaining support, including like money, funding, and weapon systems to help with their efforts to push back on Russia following the initial invasion. Looking within just Joint Base Lewis-McChord as the power projection platform for the Indo-Pacific region, we've looked at some of the things that the first multi-domain task force has done recently. One thing that's resonated in the news a few times is they did deploy their mid-range missile system over to the Philippines during Exercise Salaknib last spring. We continue to see this come up in Indo-Pacific regional news, where China views this as a threat. So in that way, they did leverage this deployment of their MRC to send a strategic message. Speaking from my sister service, the Navy, we often see placement of their ships, to send a strategic message, to our competing nations or potentially to adversaries. We also had 11th Airborne Division, which I cited in my article. 11th Airborne Division also quickly did an airborne operation or joint forcible airborne entry into the Aleutian Islands last fall. This was a quick, just a display of their capability and kind of a power projection to show what that division was capable of doing if called upon to provide security or to deter adversary aggression.
That's fascinating. And when you're doing those kinds of operations and you're participating in that stuff as a public affairs professional, how do you balance the need for operational security with our goal of obviously maximum disclosure, minimum delay?
Absolutely. I think it's very important to work alongside in your staff. You really have to build those relationships, especially with your intel officers, your legal team, and your operations officers, and always make sure that, you know, as the information that you want to put out, you're definitely screening that and kind of looking ahead at what are the second, third order effects of this information I want to share, like looking at garrison operations. When you have a soldier that's initially arrested, okay, you know, you understand like you're legally responsible to share information with the public, but I think you can shape that information, you know, and work alongside with your fellow staff members to provide the best information to the public, you know, while honoring being transparent and honest. You know, you're also shaping the narrative for how that information is going out. Looking at an operational standpoint, you know, if we're like I've served in Afghanistan three times as a public affairs officer, and as you're following along in the operations process in the 96-hour targeting cycle, and looking at, you know, okay, they're going to conduct an operation, they're going to conduct a strike in this area, and then you're working to shape, you know, whether the battle damage assessment or if we want to highlight a successful, you know, capture of a key adversarial leader, or we're trying to gain space in the battlefield. I think public affairs has the ability to quickly push out information to highlight a success story and, again, show the successfulness of our operations and help support what are the objectives that our command is trying to achieve.
And you also mentioned how important it is to counter enemy mis- and disinformation. Can you share any specific tactics that you've seen that do that effectively?
Yes. I think participate in a warfighter exercise with teams from 1st Special Forces Group, 11th Airborne Division, 5th Security Assistance Force Brigade, and 25th Infantry Division. And just around the clock monitoring of the information going out. And again, being part of the planning process. So we were quick, you know, looking through a simulation. We were quickly releasing information, you know, to highlight, you know, operational successes that were taking place. And then as we're seeing adversarial, you know, mis- and disinformation, we're training our soldiers to quickly respond with what the accurate information is to help prevent the false narratives from spreading and correct them. And I think the key is to building trust with your audiences by constantly, mm-hmm. you know, honoring that timely, truthful, accurate release of information.
Absolutely. Another thing that you do and have done is urge commanders to integrate public affairs into operational planning as well. We don't often think about that as the boots on the ground public affairs professionals that we sometimes are. So another reason I think it's you have a unique perspective. What sort of specific actions can commanders take, do you think, that would ensure public affairs is being effectively included in their strategies?
So public affairs definitely needs a seat at the table, especially, and a lot of times, again, the commander is thinking about many things, speaking from an Army side of it, their lethal capability tends to be foremost in their mind. I think for a public affairs professional, you need to go in and make sure that you're part of those targeting meetings as they're planning, operations going out within the next, you know, four to 96 to 24 hours. You should be, you know, integrated in that planning process and then working alongside the other non-kinetic teams to make sure that you're not committing information fratricide. So looking at what public affairs message or imagery could be captured to support this operation and when would it be appropriate to release that to help amplify the success of that operation and achieve an effect. So definitely being part of the targeting process, you know, part of the daily operational synchronization meetings, and just as you, you know, you know, apply yourself, listening to how your, what your commander's focus area, understanding your commander's intent, and then that way you can help to shape the public affairs effort. So you're a valuable asset to the team. And then commanders, just helping your commander by providing situational updates, you know, showing them in a very organized report of, hey, this is the imagery we captured here, links, this is some of the external news coverage, these are some of the social media products that we pushed out to help, you know, you achieve an effect, you know, in the information space alongside of the kinetic effects you've achieved through this operation.
You know, we've talked in the past about social media and our digital platforms and how effective they are when it comes to releasing products and communicating. Do you still feel or do you feel today that those digital platforms are our most effective methods of information distribution, or are traditional methods better, or is there a method I'm not even thinking of that's more effective? Or do you think really that digital the digital platforms are kind of here to stay and staying in the lead of that information distribution?
From my experience, I feel that I do think digital platforms are definitely here to stay. I encourage all public affairs professionals, even, you know, soldiers, non-commissioned officers, and officers, do the research. Look at which audiences you're trying to reach. You know, what's their literacy level? How do they receive information? And then you're going to have to tailor how you're communicating with them. I think there's a proliferation of digital platforms out there, and you know, while it's convenient to use the tried and true platforms that we've used for the last decade or so, I think we need to be willing to adapt to where our audience is at. I think there's other professionals who said that go where your audience is. Looking at Afghanistan, where they didn't have as much access to, you know, network communications, you know, a face-to-face engagement was much more effective and word-of-mouth spread than, you know, putting a lot of information out online just to reach that particular audience. Looking at our key audience, our soldiers and our family members, you know, there's a couple of ways. You know, one is definitely, you know, you can leverage those social media pages. Not everybody's following the unit pages, so maybe looking at which pages family members are on and how to give them information. And then, you know, there's always the formation. You know, soldiers are receiving information from their command teams. You can always plug in, you know, what do we need our soldiers to know, like what policy changes have happened, or, you know, what would help them make their life a little easier, what quality of life programs do we have, and leveraging, again, that word of mouth. But definitely, I think we need to become masters of our craft, and we need to constantly be ready to adapt to the emerging platforms. Right now, it does look like digital, online, anything you can access through your phone, and other people are much smarter at this than I am, but, you know, ways that you can get information via, like, you know, I know sometimes we use text messaging or like mass text or other ways to get information out. But definitely I would say first start with the research so you're not wasting your effort. You know, we all have limited resources to do our job. So definitely, you know, connect some research, look at which audiences you're trying to reach with what information, and then work to tailor your strategy to that. Traditional news media can be very beneficial if you're trying to reach senior leaders or U.S. government officials or, you know, or even business leaders. If you're trying to get, you know, sometimes in papers or news networks that are, you know, are more seasoned, like CNN or Washington Post or New York Times, they tend to be viewed as more credible by senior executives or senior leaders. So sometimes getting that key article or opinion piece in through those outlets can be effective at trying to reach a specific audience.
We were kicking around in a planning meeting the idea of teaching them smoke signals, but I just don't think that's going to be effective. So,
one day.
Speaking of technology and its wonderfulness, how do you think AI will be useful to our career field? Do you see it impacting us in a positive way, a negative way? What do you think about AI use for communicators?
That is a great question. I think AI is definitely one of those emerging capabilities. I know that there's practitioners that are using AI. I think we need to learn how to use that ethically. I definitely think it's a tool that we need to understand how to harness. It can also be can be used against us, again, by, you know, adversaries. You can quickly push out information in a mass form, leveraging AI. You know, a bot could quickly, you know, proliferate information that could harm our ability to gain public support. And I think we need to understand how it works. I think we also need to put some ethical parameters in place from a public affairs perspective so we still maintain that credibility and the trust of our audiences. But I definitely think AI is coming in the future, and it's something that we need to learn how to leverage effectively.
I want to talk just a little bit about training, obviously, because that's what we do here. And you were, heavily involved in our training management while you were here. So how important do you think training is for public affairs teams in adapting to the demands of modern warfare? And what areas do you think we need really need to focus on?
Training is always important. I think every day we should look at it as an opportunity to train and learn and grow. And as I said in the beginning, the information environment, we see it's constantly changing how information is being shared, the channels people are using. I think from a technical perspective, we always need to continue to stay abreast of the new technologies and how we can do things like make videos on our phone or just shooting high quality pictures with small mobile devices if you're not able to bring a whole full DSLR kit somewhere. I think as a basic skill, at the core of public affairs, we always need to be practiced at writing and publicly speaking. And that is, it's a skill that is a bit perishable at times. And I think we should always work to improve those basic skills. We're called on to build relationships and to publicly share information about our organization. So I think looking at the core skills, definitely writing, basic photography, public speaking, those are skills that are always going to be part of our career field. And then looking at the emerging types of technology or ways that we can use capturing imagery or just like you mentioned, artificial intelligence, how can we leverage those emerging technologies to be as effective as many of our competitors are in the information space. So training is always important. I think establishing mentorship programs is also helpful when you can't, when we don't have the money to go to a formal training program. I think taking, for those of us who are more senior, just taking on the responsibility of trying to help grow the junior members of the career field so that they can rise up and become, senior effective communicators, in the future for our career field. If I can put a plug in for a book that was actually published by DINFOS instructors that I'm actually going through now, even though it's a very basic book on public relations, it's called Public Relations in the Military, the Scope, Dynamic, and Future of Military Communications. And it was published in 2022 by a team of DINFOS instructors and a few other military professionals. I mean, not to make people pay for anything. You can probably take this out in the library, but it's definitely worth a read and just kind of looking at the basics of public affairs and what's important to be successful as a practitioner at the basic level. And then looking at, of course, again, we're always evolving. So things like social media, like something that works really well today in 2025 may be antiquated within the next 12 months. So I think I think it's good. Talks at the core of, you want to gain that trust of the commander. You want to be seen as an advisor to the commander on your specialty area. Mm-hmm. So I think some of the leadership feedback I've received from general officers is, for me, I'm a staff officer. There's also leadership positions where you might have a detachment or something, but as a staff member, you definitely want to be the subject matter expert of your functional area. So trying to, just stay plugged in and always looking at how do I approach this from a public affairs perspective, and then don't be afraid to reach out to, again, those more seasoned professionals to get advice on how to handle different situations. Don't feel like you're on an island and you have to handle this complex situation by yourself. Reach out and work together with other, I think we do best when we align our communication efforts instead of trying to feel that you have to be the superhero of whatever the event is. And there's a lot of, we see a lot of complex events coming up in the news cycle every day that practitioners are called to respond to, not just in a conflict.
Mm-hmm. You are also one of the very few members of a small and select group who are public affairs communicators who went from the enlisted to the officer corps. And something that we see with both the public affairs students here and the MCF students, so the enlisted students, is that they, neither group really has a clear understanding of how they should best work with each other when they get out to the field and sort of what the expectations are. Being a member of both groups, can you kind of tell us what the enlisted can expect from their officer corps and sort of what the officers should expect from their enlisted when they get out to the field?
Sure. And this is, again, my own personal perspective. I, you know, when I was a younger enlisted member, you're very, when you're in a private, E1 through E4, you're a little bit disconnected from what the senior, like what you would consider seeing like a lieutenant colonel or a full bird colonel. You don't get as much interaction. I think, you know, as a junior enlisted, as you're, you know, like someone who's just come out of the schoolhouse, you want to be, you know, you're excited about doing the profession, the techniques. Like looking at the Army, obviously you still need to be a soldier, and I think Marines kind of, they enforce this a lot with doing your kind of your battle, your tactics that you need to understand for your own branch of service. But I think, you know, as a junior soldier, like the best way, like for me, the junior soldiers that I have that work with me today in First Corps, I mean, they do an amazing job of, you know, capturing the imagery and getting out there with those units to, like, as we're, you know, Secretary of Defense Hegseth is giving us guidance on things that we should highlight, you know, what he wants us to focus on from a communication perspective. And so those junior soldiers do an excellent job of deploying out to embed with the units and getting that key imagery and building rapport amongst unit leaders to show, like, they're professional, they're technical specialists, you know, they can help to, you know, enhance what the unit's trying to do or what they're trying to communicate. So getting out there and capturing imagery, creating the content that we can share with digital platforms, and at times if we're able to send media, whether it's traditional or non-traditional media out there with the unit, you know, those younger professionals can kind of help facilitate, you know, those media representatives talking to, you know, members of the unit so they can gain a better understanding of the training and what our focus areas are for our unit. As an officer, I know that I speak to a lot of junior officers, and I probably was this way as well. You know, I think, you know, while it's interesting to do the technical piece, you know, the photography and the writing, I think, you know, we really need to provide the vision. We need to develop those staff relationships. We need to be creating those situational reports and the updates and helping, number one, helping our command teams understand, like, the value that we add to their efforts, you know, so we're value added to what their overall effect that they're trying to achieve. And then in advocating for our enlisted population, you know, we're helping them out. Either we're writing them up for awards, or they're making sure they're getting recognized for the work that they're doing. And so I think as an officer, you know, work to build those relationships and gain rapport so that you can advocate for your section, whether they need funding for new equipment or you're trying to get them out to go to travel to different places. Like our soldiers have been able to travel to like Japan and Thailand and Hawaii. You know, so advocating for your soldiers to get out and have those experiences, and then I think the payoff is, you know, your soldiers are, they're collecting that key content that helps, you know, your command show, you know, senior military leaders or American audiences at broad, you know, the mission that we're doing and how we're being effective at accomplishing our mission.
You have mentioned several great examples of ways that public affairs can be more effective and ways that we contribute to strategic success, which is extremely important, I think, for folks to get that big picture view. Is there any other ways that you can think that public affairs can grow or change or contribute more in this increasingly complex global environment that we find ourselves in?
Absolutely. Aside from, not to repeat things I said before, and I think what I'd like to say is, you know, just really building those relationships. I think that, you know, at the core of, you know, besides writing and public speaking and photography, you know, building those relationships, I've seen many public affairs either become very successful or kind of get pushed into the basin with the red stapler. I think, you know, making sure that you're, you know, and you're not always going to have a good connection with everybody in your organization. But I think, you know, showing your value added. But I think really proactively going around to the, even if you're an NCO or, you know, or a soldier, like just meeting and engaging with people and, and kind of helping to educate them on what you do to support the staff, what your role is. I think training and, doing physical fitness training and working alongside of them also builds those connections. And then it shows that you're part of the team. I think those are important ways to get the door open so that you can do the technical and the creative work that you want to do as a public affairs practitioner. And then for an off, for the senior public affairs people, sergeant majors and lieutenant colonels and colonels, like that helps us to, gain that rapport and better, to advocate on behalf of the public affairs career field and show that we are value added, because when we're not looked at as being value added, then when they start cutting positions or funding, it's going to, end up being cut from, that's the fear that it would be cut from public affairs, the public affairs career field. So definitely we want to continue to advocate and show our capability. And I think it's one of the reasons I wanted to write the articles. I feel like, many times we'll go to training, and they won't even cover like kind of the information environment or what public affairs does, or we were kind of pigeonholed into all we do is hold a press conference or we write a press release. And I think it's important, just, and not in like a showy way, but just really trying to help, embed yourself, show that you're part of a team, build those relationships and show and help to educate people on like what the public affairs capability brings to the table.
Any final tips or tricks that you have for soon-to-be graduates or students at DINFOS before they head out the door and go out into the great big field?
Just understand, like, they have the power to tell, America or keep public the story of what the Department of Defense is doing or their own service. They have a lot of power in their hands with the photos they take and the stories they write. So go out there and do good things. Try not to be disheartened when people don't first understand what your role is. Just keep working at it. And I think always just be open to the new and adaptive, technologies that are coming out. Just be open to learning and growing as you go along.
Well, thank you, ma'am. You are certainly an excellent writer and an even better guest. So we really appreciate you joining us today and kind of giving us this inside look into big picture public affairs. So thank you again so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for the opportunity. I really appreciate it.